Today is Wednesday, the 27th of November, day before Thanksgiving, and this is Kathy coming to you with the Herald and Review for the Decatur area for their special edition. I won't be reading the inserts, however, which are quite lengthy. Starting on page one, no spotlight required. Longtime banker, latest inductee to Decatur's Hall of Fame by Annalisa Trofimuk. Quite often, inductees into the Decatur Hall of Fame are well known in the community, always making headlines and public appearances. Not this year. In awarding the designation to David G. Weber, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf acknowledged that the longtime local banker is not the typical candidate. Today's honoree is one of those people who has worked tirelessly behind the scenes to make this community better in so many ways, she said. Later adding, he helped make sure that Decatur had phenomenal schools and really spearheaded an effort to make sure that things continued to be great in this community. As has become tradition in recent years, the title was announced shortly before the start of the 67th Annual Community Thanksgiving Luncheon. The award is granted each year to a community member who goes above and beyond to better Decatur. A plaque featuring Weber's image and summary of his accomplishments will be displayed with others in the Decatur Civic Center lobby. Weber, Executive Vice President of Business Development for Busey Bank, was shocked when Moore Wolf made the announcement. After all, he'd been tricked. To get him to the ceremony, friends and family told Weber that his close friend, former Mayor Mike McElroy, was going to be honored. McElroy died in 2015. The former mayor's widow, Lynn McElroy, was also in on the surprise. She is Weber's next-door neighbor and said both during the ceremony and afterward that her late husband would have wanted Weber to receive the recognition. Mike would not have thought of anybody besides Dave to receive the honor, Lynn McElroy said after the announcement. He is such a giving person, and Mike would talk a lot about the things he did. He is always there when you need him. He just loves Decatur so much. Weber, 71, is a 1971 graduate of Millikan University. He was named one of the Herald and Review's 20 Under 50 in 2011. At the time, Weber said he had held leadership positions with the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur, Junior Achievement, American Cancer Society, Boy Scouts, United Way, First Grant, Partners in Education, the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce, Westminster Presbyterian Church, Millikan University Science Building Campaign, Richland Community Foundation, and Webster Cantrell Hall. He also volunteered with organizations such as Meals on Wheels, Good Samaritan Inn, and Robertson Charter School. Marinda Rothrock, Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce President, said that the Decatur Hall of Fame honors individuals who have made a substantial contribution to Decatur and Macon County. Weber's plaque is now among the 27 others on a brick wall in the lobby of the Decatur Civic Center. Honorees from recent years include Daryl Beck, Howard Buffett, Roger Walker Jr., and Dwayne Andreas. Extremely humbled by the honor, Weber said he felt he was not as deserving as others who have received the title. He also mentioned he is excited to see young Decatur residents getting involved in the community. It makes me so happy to see groups of young people doing their share in the community, Weber said. You get back more than you give, and that is the whole point. And about David Weber, the plaque in the Decatur Civic Center to honor David G. Weber says the following. Always smiling, the longtime local banker and Millikan alum passionately served others. As a tireless chairman and volunteer for numerous charitable organizations throughout his career, Dave left a lasting positive impression on all he met. A vocal champion of the community and a constant presence at community events, Dave did his best to move Decatur forward and keep everyone smiling. Ray encourages audience to inspire others. Decatur Community Gathers for Annual Thanksgiving Luncheon by Annalisa Trofimuk. You never know if something you've said or done inspires those around you to take action in their own lives. That was a key takeaway from the remarks of Dr. Dana Ray, keynote speaker at the 67th Annual Community Thanksgiving Luncheon on Tuesday. She urged the crowd of more than 800 people to focus on the positive influences in their lives and to spread positivity to others. Influential people empower others, Ray said. I encourage you to live a life of influence so you can create more people like you and me who can carry the torch of service to others in our community. Ray spoke about people who influenced her career path, which has led to her current position as Chief Medical Officer at Crossing Healthcare. She also served as a Decatur City Council member from 2009 to earlier this year. She said family members such as her grandmother inspired her to pursue a career in medicine and contribute to a solution to make health care affordable for everyone. She also spoke about the impact of her 8th grade science teacher and of Dr. Evelyn Odunsi, a late Decatur physician who inspired Ray when she was a teenager. She also spoke about her relationship with God. It wasn't necessarily words that they said, Ray said, referring to those who had helped guide her. It was how they made me feel. I want you to understand today that you have that same power of influence. The annual tradition fills the Decatur Civic Center's arena with hundreds of members of local organizations and employees of various businesses. Nelson's Catering provides a Thanksgiving meal served by volunteers, including members from the Lutheran School Association, Maroa Forsyth FFA, MacArthur High School, and others. Dozens of attendees on Tuesday identified themselves as having attended the luncheon for more than 25 years, and a handful have been to 50 of the annual events. The Reverend Joe Bowman of Heartland Community Church delivered the invocation. Students in the Millikan University Choir performed two songs as attendees ate their lunch of turkey, mashed potatoes and gravy, green beans, rolls, and pumpkin pie. A large platform served as the stage for the head table, decorated by the Garden Club of Decatur with orange, red, and yellow floral arrangements, as well as canned food items that would be later donated to the Northeast Community Fund. Seated at the head table were 35 leaders who recently moved to Decatur, who have made significant contributions in the past year. Drew Early, president and CEO of Decatur Memorial Hospital, recently moved to Decatur and offered a word of thanks for receiving a warm welcome. In the season of thanks, it is only appropriate that I convey my sincere gratitude to the Decatur community, Early said. Having moved here just 4 months ago, my family has been welcomed with open arms. We've found a community that is warm, engaged, and proud. Each person seated at the head table received a personal introduction from Marinda Rothrock, president of the Decatur Regional Chamber of Commerce, followed by a single clap from the audience. Among those at the table were Macon County CASA Executive Director Julia Livingston, Decatur City Manager Scott Wrighton, Baby Talk Executive Director Cindy Bardelaban, and the Decatur Hall of Fame's newest inductee Dave Weber. A different keynote speaker is selected each year. Ray, at the end of her speech, asked that each person find someone they could inspire through kindness. I want you to reflect today on how many people you can touch, she said. And this article also on the front page, under Decatur Government, Lie Leaving Decatur for McLean County by Paul Zweig. A key leader in the City of Decatur's neighborhood revitalization effort is moving to a new job as Executive Director of the McLean County Regional Planning Commission. Raymond Lai, the city's Director of Economic and Community Development, was announced as Executive Director late afternoon, Tuesday, by Regional Planning Commission President Carl Teichman. Decatur City Manager Scott Wrighton said in an email Tuesday that he had tried to convince Lai to stay, but serving as the executive of a Regional Planning Commission is something Lai really wanted to do. Ray has been a well-qualified senior management team member. I'm sorry to lose him from Decatur, Wrighton said. Lai could not be reached for comment. In Decatur, he has led a department team of 21 staff members for economic and community development programs and activities. When he was hired in 2017, Lai was expected to be the point person for the city's wide-ranging revitalization effort, which included gathering extensive public feedback. Wrighton said, Lai would be replaced because neighborhood revitalization is the council's number one priority, and this is a key position in implementing the council's revitalization strategies. Lai was hired in Decatur by former city manager Tim Gleason, who took the same job in Bloomington last year. Lai fills the vacancy left by Vasudha Gadu-Raju, who had served in that position since 2013 and departed in July to become Director of Innovation and Technology for the town of Normal. Gadu-Raju previously worked as a planner for the city of Decatur until 2013 when she took the McLean County job. He will join the Regional Planning Commission on January 6th. He will have an annual salary of $116,376, County Administrator Camille Rodriguez said. Lai has experience with regional and urban planning, economic development, and neighborhood revitalization in Decatur, Edwardsville, and St. Louis County, according to the Regional Planning Commission. He was the primary city liaison for the Madison County City of Edwardsville, Village of Glen Carbon, I-55 Corridor Transportation and Growth Management Plan, according to the Regional Planning Commission. Lai has a master's degree in city and regional planning from Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville. And in the local section, Team ADM delivers. Company puts money, manpower behind Northeast Community Fund's mission, by Annalisa Trofimuk. A group of Archer Daniels Midland Company employees dressed in blue shirts that read Team ADM packed food boxes Tuesday morning that would feed nearly 500 families on Thanksgiving. The Northeast Community Fund facility on Martin Luther King Drive was bustling Tuesday with ADM employees who contributed in an effort to get traditional staples into the hands of local people who otherwise might not have had a Thanksgiving meal. "One of our core values is food security," said Alicia Ralston, Vice President of Supply Chain Management. "We want to make sure the people in our community know where their next meal is coming from, especially if it's a Thanksgiving meal." The Northeast Community Fund is a social service agency offering food, clothing, house items, financial assistance, and other goods and services to those in need. The nonprofit moved this year into a new facility at 839 North Martin Luther King Drive. The new facility is 20,000 square feet and has separate areas for lobby, clothing room, offices, and food storage. ADM officials also on Tuesday awarded Northeast Community Fund with a $112,000 donation. Ed Bacon, Northeast Community Fund Executive Director, said that ADM's kindness in volunteering and donations is what helps the organization continue to operate. "We don't take any state or federal funding," he said. "All the services we offer are based on private donations from foundations like ADM Cares, individual contributions, and churches." The donation money was collected in a number of ways. Bacon said a portion of the donation came from a $55,000 grant approved in the spring. Ralston said the rest was raised in the company's Pie in the Face challenge, where 10 people agreed to raise $750. If they didn't, they got a pie in the face. The goal was $7,500, which they surpassed by raising a total of $28,466. ADM provided a matching contribution. The efforts align with ADM's corporate campaign, ADM Cares. "We want to give back to the community where we live and work," Ralston said. And following our season of giving, the Herald and Review is covering numerous nonprofit groups and community members giving back this holiday season. Use hashtag TogetherDecatur to join the conversation on social media. Have someone we should feature? Email apetty@heraldreview.com. And sticking with good news, under the briefs, event to spotlight nonprofits. A Decatur Church's 5th Annual Giving Tuesday is back December 3rd to benefit 25 nonprofit agencies in the surrounding area. Representatives from various agencies will be available from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 4 to 6 p.m. at Decatur First United Methodist Church, 201 West North Street, to answer questions and share information about the services they provide to the community. Jennifer Horton Motter, the Director of Children and Family Ministries, said the agencies will share different volunteer opportunities and financial needs they might have. She said this is a great way to kickstart the holiday season by giving back. Giving Tuesday is an opportunity for residents to give financial support to charitable organizations in Macon County. Luigi's reopens after fire. Luigi's Italian restaurant in Mattoon has reopened after completing repairs and renovations following the March 21st fire that destroyed the adjacent Shores jewelry store building. Co-owner Massimo Alisi said that Luigi's, 1610 Broadway Avenue, has begun serving up full menu of pasta, entrees, pizza, hot sandwiches, salads, and signature home-baked Italian rolls again from 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. 7 days a week. "A lot of customers who were my regular customers have been back here. They missed the food. Everyone was excited we reopened," Alisi said. Ethanol supporters refine message. It has been a long time since former Presidents Dane Friend and Steve Wentworth, of the National Corn Growers Association went to Washington lobbying for Congress to include ethanol in the U.S. motor fuel supply. The congressional testimony of those Macon County farmers frequently focused on the reed vapor pressure of ethanol as they attempted to dispel concerns that it would aggravate efforts to stave off air pollution in certain U.S. cities. Their adversaries were lobbyists from the petroleum industry. That was eons ago. Ethanol is now 10% of the motor fuel supply, and corn growers are working to raise that percentage to 15%. But the battle is far from over, and the amount of corn going into ethanol production has begun to decline along with the percentage. Ironically, the decline is not because the petroleum industry has better lobbyists and better arguments. Far from it. Today's ethanol advocates have a completely different set of adversaries to overcome. Jeff Cooper, CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, told Illinois corn growers on Tuesday that Administrator Andrew Wheeler of the Environmental Protection Agency and his predecessor Scott Pruitt were more closely aligned with the fossil fuel industry and created roadblocks for ethanol. When they exempted petroleum refineries from the congressional mandate to blend ethanol into their motor fuel, that meant less corn would be used in 2019 than in 2018 for ethanol refining. Cooper says the EPA is rewriting some regulations that hopefully will keep a maximum of 15 billion gallons of ethanol going into the U.S. motor fuel supply. But in the wake of the EPA's adverse treatment of ethanol, the entire lobbying landscape is changing, and corn growers who make the ethanol pitch to their congressional representatives will have to learn new lingo, new technology, and be prepared to even educate their neighbors to do the same. The ethanol pitch du jour will soon include the terms low carbon and high octane. Sorry, Dane and Steve, but reed vapor pressure has been put out to pasture. New President Bill Lee of the Illinois Corn Growers Association said that he realizes that the association has a political battle to wage as it motivates corn growers to educate members of Congress about today's ethanol issues. But the stakes will soon be much higher than in the mid-1980s when Dane and Steve were attempting to get gas stations to install a pump that would dispense ethanol, supported by friendly legislation. The new focus will be on legislation that will encompass the climate and energy and other issues that will have a more global impact than what happens at the corner gas station. The issues are bigger, more people will want to control the conversation, and there is more than the vapor pressure of ethanol at stake. But a successful inclusion of low-carbon, high-octane ethanol will not only reverse the declining demand for corn, but will extrapolate that U.S. farm commodity to a global source of energy and give a renewal to a tired and threatened U.S. farm economy. That article was written by Stu Ellis, who is an observer of the Central Illinois agriculture scene, and he writes this weekly column, and also on WCIA, he does his From the Farm and Harvest Heritage reports. And on a more sour note, Girlfriend Beats Man with Bat, Police Say, by Tony Reed. Police said a 64-year-old Decatur man who was clubbed to the ground by his bat-wielding girlfriend needed multiple staples to close two large lacerations in his scalp. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police said the violence broke out late Monday afternoon at the apartment the man shares with the 41-year-old woman. Writing in the affidavit, Officer Clinton Babb said that the woman denied attacking her boyfriend of 5 years, but Babb didn't buy her story that the man had walked into the apartment already injured. After speaking to her, I checked the apartment rear stairwell and parking lot, but did not observe any suspected blood outside the apartment, said Babb. He earlier noted in the affidavit that both wounds in the boyfriend's head were bleeding. The boyfriend told police he had been struck during an argument with his girlfriend. He advised during the verbal argument he turned his back to her and she struck him one time in the back of the head with a wooden bat, added Babb. He advised this caused him to fall to the floor and advised he had a criminal complaint. The man was later treated at HSHS St. Mary's Hospital, where medical staff told police the head wounds required staples to close. The woman was booked on preliminary charges of aggravated domestic battery and domestic battery. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. Macon County jail records showed the girlfriend remained in custody Tuesday night in lieu of posting $10,000 in bail. Prosecutors had asked for $40,000. If she makes bail, she is ordered to stay away from the victim and his home. And under Decatur Business, Love of Games Inspires Business by Garrett Kirsten. Kyle Tomey took his love of hosting game nights citywide by opening his business where customers will be able to play his personal collection of over 400 games. If you've seen games on the shelf, I probably have it, including the old ones you can't find anymore, said Tomey, owner of the Hungry Hippo Board Game Cafe. The grand opening for the business at 2950 North Water Street is scheduled for December 7th. Game giveaways, discounted passes, tickets for playing games, and drink passes are scheduled in celebration of the shop officially opening. Prices are $5 per person for unlimited time to play games, or $3 for children 10 and younger. Tomey said he would consider membership and multiple pass options in the future. Games in the collection include classics like Monopoly, checkers, cards, spanning to others released as recently as this month. The favorites of Tomey's game night group, which he hosted in his Decatur home for about 2 years, were Catan and Codenames. The goal is to add new games to the store's collection each month, maybe even each week if business picks up quickly, he said. The shop also serves a menu of hot drinks like lattes and coffee, along with soda and various snacks. The idea was to provide a game night atmosphere for customers to melt away from the stress of things, without worrying about cleaning up afterward. Those looking to purchase a game for their home use can get a test run at the business. There's not a specific place designed to just pick out a game and play it, Tomey said. I wanted to bring it to Decatur because I had too many games myself, and I asked, how can I share games with my community? Those who want a sneak peek can stop in this week. Tomey plans for the business to be unofficially open from 4 to 8 p.m. today, closed Thursday, 4 to 9 p.m. Friday, and 2 to 9 p.m. on Saturday. These times may change. Speeding Leads to Drug Arrest by Kennedy Nolan. A 52-year-old man who was pulled over Monday morning for speeding and having expired registration is facing drug charges after officers say they found heroin in his sleeve. Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland said at 12:40 a.m. an officer followed a vehicle traveling south on 16th Street at a high rate of speed, ran the registration, and it was expired. Copeland said when the officer conducted a traffic stop in the 1600 block of East Moore Street, the driver exited the vehicle and began walking toward the officer. The officer ordered the man back inside his vehicle and saw a knotted plastic baggie on the floorboard, Copeland said. He said during a canine sniff of the vehicle, the dog alerted and the officer conducted a search. The 52-year-old driver handed the officer a pill bottle of green leafy substance, Copeland said. The officers located two more plastic bottles inside of his shirt sleeve containing 7 foil packets consistent with the packaging of heroin. The substance field tested positive for heroin and weighed 1.8 grams with packaging, Copeland said. The man was arrested and is facing 2 preliminary charges of manufacturing, delivery of heroin, and possession of a controlled substance. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. And reporting on the Decatur Turkey Tournament, says Cold Turkey by Matthew Flatten. A Decatur institution celebrated half a century of standout basketball as the Decatur Turkey Tournament opened play on its 50th edition on Tuesday. Both Eisenhower and Mount Zion saw first-round action facing Bolingbroke and Peoria, respectively, with both the Braves and the Panthers losing their season openers. After falling behind at the end of the first quarter, 13-9, the Panthers went as cold as leftover turkey in the second quarter, scoring 6 points to trail by 14, 29-15, and ultimately lose 70-43. There wasn't much we can take from this game. Just some guys are ready to practice but didn't make the transition to the game tonight, Eisenhower coach Rodney Walker said. We aren't going to shoot this bad every night, but there is no excuse for our defense. I don't expect everybody to be clicking on the first night, but I see more team cohesiveness at practice. Behind 6 third-quarter points by Karen Shelley, Eisenhower was much more aggressive in the third, cutting the lead to under 10. Shelley, who sports pink hair, also had an athletic block in the quarter to energize the Panthers fans. Shelley finished with 9 points and 7 rebounds. R.J. Walker led the Panthers with 11 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists. There were about 5 or 6 guys out there today that were deer in the headlights, but that's part of the turkey tournament. We will get things together when we face Mount Zion, Walker said. The Panthers will face Mount Zion in a consolation round semifinal Friday at 1 p.m. at Stephen Decatur Middle School. MacArthur opens its turkey tournament play Wednesday against Springfield Southeast at 7:30 p.m. The other Wednesday opening game round game tip-offs at 6 p.m. featuring Harvey Thornton battling Dunlop. Bolingbrook runs past Mount Zion. In Mount Zion coach Dale Schuring's debut, the Braves had the difficult task of facing three-time defending Turkey Tournament champions Bolingbrook in their opening round game. The Raiders showed immediately they will be in contention for another tournament by jumping out to a 29-10 lead after the first quarter and going on to a 74-42 victory. We knew going in we were a little bit behind with football going as late as it did. Bolingbrook's speed and athleticism hurt us. We knew our backs were against the wall, but you have to start somewhere, and now we know what we can work on and get better from there, Schuring said. Drew London was the leading scorer in the first half for Mount Zion with 6 points. Mekki Adams added 5 points, and his brother Matthias Adams had 4. The Raiders led 54-21 at halftime, but after the break, the Braves' play improved. Mount Zion won the third quarter 13-12 behind 8 points by Nash Mose, and a defense that challenged Bolingbrook much harder in the first half. I thought we played a better second half than we did the first half. We hurt ourselves a lot in the first half, and we never really got back on defense, and they shot it well most of the night, Schuring said. Schuring will depend on London and Nash to let their experience lead on the court. Without a doubt, those are the two guys with the most experience. The guys with experience will have to lead us, he said. We just have to get more fundamentally sound as a team, and we will get there. Bolingbrook advances to play Peoria in the championship semifinals on Friday at 6 p.m. at Stephen Decatur. And I'm going to finish up this first half hour with just a few brief things, and this is called Digest, and most of these are national or international. Oversight panel sues over census. The House Oversight Committee sued two top Trump administration officials Tuesday for refusing to produce documents related to a decision to add citizenship question to the 2020 census. Attorney General William Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross have not produced a single additional document since the Supreme Court blocked the administration's efforts to include a citizenship question last June, the committee said. The lawsuit marks the latest action by Democrats to use their House majority to aggressively investigate the inner workings of the Trump administration, including a House vote in July to hold Barr and Ross in contempt of Congress over the census issue. Oversight is also is one the House committee's leading an impeachment inquiry of President Donald Trump. Powerful quake kills 21 in Albania. Durrës, Albania. Rescue crews with excavators searched for survivors trapped in toppled apartment buildings and hotels Tuesday as the death toll from a powerful pre-dawn earthquake in Albania climbed to 21, with more than 600 people injured. The magnitude 6.4 quake was felt across the southern Balkans and followed by aftershocks, with several above magnitude 5. In nearby Bosnia, another trembler with a preliminary magnitude of 5.4 struck southeast of Sarajevo, causing only minor damage. The quake in Albania knocked down apartment buildings and hotels while people slept, and rescue crews worked into the evening to free more people believed trapped. There was no indication as to how many might still be buried in the rubble, as neighboring countries and European Union nations sent search and rescue crews to help. And let's see, I think I'll stop right there and take a break, and I'll be back in a couple of minutes with the second half of the Herald and Review.